In hypnosis, then, Johnny relayed that this entity claimed to be Huberty, the man who had killed the people in the McDonald's restaurant in California, that he claimed to have been a nephew of Hatier in his previous life, a boy of about 10 who worshipped his uncle. He boasted, he can do anything. He can kill thousands if he wants to. The boy himself had been killed by a bomb. He incarnated in America and this time died from a policeman's bullet through the head. Now he was wandering, and he was attracted to Lana's home. She's a magnet, she draws people. Lana has almost daily friendly visitors whom she feels but does not quite see. She holds one-sided conversations with them. She enjoys their company. When this one came, however, she did not recognize him as a visitor. Instead, her own personality began to change and become strident and sharply critical of everything and everyone. Huberty was oppressing her, although he was not within her as an obsessing presence. In meditation, one of the other ladies saw him now, standing at the far edge of the room. We had ordered him away from Lana but had not sent him clear away. Johnny said that he was watching us, listening to us, in bewilderment and unbelief, as if he had never in his life met people such as we were. Francie gave him a real talking to. He was 138, familiar with authority and behaved himself after she reprimanded him sharply for having shot up the restaurant and now ordered him to keep his distance from Lana and the rest of us. After Johnny's conversation with him, he agreed to leave but asked if he could come again. Johnny hesitated a moment, then said yes, if he would not cause any trouble. Later she told us that the porch swing had been swinging again the next day, this time as if two people were in it. Huberty told her the second person was a woman but she has nothing to do with this situation. After that we heard no more about him. This, therefore, was not truly a rescue. At that time we did not know how to rescue such obdurate persons. We did describe to Huberty the place of learning. He did not seem to be much interested. He was not attracted to any talk about light. He seemed to accept our insistence that he would have to pay for the misery he had caused and he hoped to avoid it. He may be still wandering. Lana's personality, by the way, became as sweet and pleasant as it was before the coming of Huberty. She became a valuable member of the group. Home is to be a sanctuary. One more aspect of our rescue work developed from this fact that several times wandering entities had invaded our own homes. Lana said that she frequently had such visitors, as I mentioned, deceased relatives and friends, most of them, but some wanderers were drawn by what they describe as a warmth, a light, or a shining flower. Lana was described by Huberty as a magnet. She draws people. My home was described as a halfway house to which entities were drawn as by a beacon light, when they found 139, themselves halfway between Earth and the next realm. Lily suggested that I ask her in hypnosis to become my house, for she felt she could discover important facts along these lines. Therefore, when she had placed herself in hypnosis, I gave her that instruction. Now become my house and tell me what you find. Are there any entities in it? Without hesitation she replied, multitudes, multitudes. It's like there is another dimension inside here. There are people who are good but who are in the clutches of Earth, bound by this dimension. There are some others who have sworn allegiance to the evil power itself. These come because it is summer and the dark forces are more active in summer. And because you have distorted the other dimension, have caused ripples. It is as if a vacuum had been created that sucked in a demon or two. They cannot eliminate you but they certainly can eliminate your help to these others by stopping you. They can attack you through your weaknesses. No human being is perfect and without weaknesses. From a higher level than Lili's being the house came the statement from my spiritual advisor Master Ching that a home should be cleared, cleansed, and dedicated as a sanctuary, belonging only to the one living in it and free of all entities except those who are invited as guests. All who enter without invitation are invaders. Although Master Ching knew I wanted to be of help even to those who came uninvited, he suggested that they come only in the company of a person who came by appointment invited and leave with that person. Then, after the dedication of this house and the grounds to the work that I am doing for the light, this would be the sanctuary it should be. Similarly with my body, in privacy I should dedicate it in order to protect it from attacks whenever I should go away from the protection of home and grounds. His suggestions 140 apply equally to all who are working in both worlds. We are all causing ripples and disturbing the status quo of the invisible worlds, and some entities are drawn to us helping to invade us and find a nest or get help, while others are determined to block that help, but all are sapping the energy of the one whose home or body they invade. Such invaders may seem to sap the life force of even flowers in a vase, causing them to wilt sooner than blossoms given to a friend from the same cutting. Since we received these explanations and suggestions, I have gratefully accepted that my home is now my private sanctuary, just as each person's body should be his or her own private temple, occupied solely by the owner. The entities lost and wandering need not be ignored nor rejected. However, sometimes in a meeting of the ESP group, I have suggested as a topic of meditation that we invite entities who are ready to move on to come and receive our help. Sometimes I lead the guided visualizations and give the soul's instruction to look for the light and move toward it. Sometimes other members of the group lead, some of whom are able to see the entities who come in response to the invitation. Virginia's attention was often focused on one or two entities who held her special interest. Johnny often saw crowds of entities, pushing each other to get closer to us. I told them there was no rush, that there was room for all and that all would be led to the light. And then, she laughed. The light appeared behind them. They all had to turn around. "The last shall be first," I quoted, laughing with her. Master Ching urged us to do this type of work regularly, to assist as many souls as possible to find their way into the proper realm and try to clear out this crowded unhealthy low astral plane of the earthbound. Master Ching's reason is thought-provoking, that before long many will be dying. "What are your feelings about that?" I asked. "I am very sad. I'm glad I don't have that body anymore. I shot myself. That wasn't life. I was forced into that life from when I was very young. It was in the South, a Mexico country, 1840. "Was there anyone who loved you?" "No." "Well, a little boy. I see him." Which means that the deceased boy had been attracted to her by her thinking of him and her love for him. "I took care of him sometimes, Paolo." "Paolo, did you come for Amiga? Or do you need help, too? Are you lost?" "It's very peaceful where I am, it's very nice. I want Amiga to come with me," said the child. Amiga's eyes filled with tears. "How could anyone care for me? I'm so ashamed. You gave love, so now you receive love. Amiga, be brave, smile at Paolo. Now kneel down and hold out your arms to him. The tears are washing out the sadness and it is being breathed out along with the shame and the feelings of being unloved. Now, you know that your body is dead, that you shot yourself. But you are not dead. I do not understand." "No, most of us don't. Our religions haven't understood nor taught us how," she interrupted. "Priests." The channel said later that some of the men who had used her were priests. "People need to realize that they have four parts, the body, the feelings and emotions, the mind and its thoughts, and the soul. Even I, of course. Life is precious in the universe, and you and Paolo are children of the universe." I carefully avoided religious terms. "Now look into your heart and see the love thee, and then go into the light and up to the high place." 144. There was a long pause, then Amiga said tentatively, "Will the high place let me?" "Of course. Don't disappoint Paolo. He came to take you to his beautiful home. But first stand in this warm little waterfall and let it shower down upon and through you, washing away loneliness and hate, dissolving away pain, sadness, grief, and feelings of unworthiness. Just let the warm shower of the waterfall wash you clean. I was using hypnotic suggestion here, and now you feel lighter. Paolo loves you." "Did anyone else love you?" "Oh, Grandmama loved me. And I'm sure she knows about you now. When you feel clean, look for the light. Another long pause, Paolo, hold out your hand to her. Help her.
Oh, will I hurt him?
She feared even to touch him.
Of course not.
Is this what it means? A little child shall lead them?
In this case, yes.
Then I'll try, I will go. But, there were more expressions of fear, unworthiness, uncleanness, etc. I then earnestly told her the story of Aldenza, the dark savage alley cat in The Man of La Mancha, whom Don Quixote saw as beautiful and virginal and treated as such, giving her a beautiful new name and the change all this caused in her. I also told Amiga about another soul I had met, another prostitute who had said, I won't tell you my name, I'm ashamed of it.
Then may I call you Mary?
I had asked.
Mary, the Mother of God?
She sneered. And to her, as to Amiga now, I had replied, God sees the soul, clean and lovely. Don Quixote saw Aldenza's soul, just as Paolo and I see yours.
Now, Amiga, go up to the high place. If the high place will take me.
Just float up to where you can see into your past life, or 145, even a life further back, and find out why you had to suffer this kind of life.
There was another pause, shorter this time.
I was a father, I was very cruel to my children. I enjoyed being cruel. They were little girls, and I hated them. I needed boys to work. I hated everybody. I hated myself. I did not love anybody. Sometimes I wondered why I was so cruel.
We did not seek the answer to this question, at least for now.
Now go to the planning stage before your birth, when you are planning this new life as Amiga. There are wise counselors to help you make choices. You will be born as a girl - a beautiful little girl, and I would suffer as I had made others suffer.
Yes,
and you learned a great deal.
Did you learn the whole lesson?
Yes.
Did they FMD out where I got the gun?
I took it from the general's uniform. She was not supposed to touch the uniform, but saw the gun and felt that this would be her only chance to escape from this life. So she took the gun, but with strong feelings of guilt as a thief. Then in the small private room, in the general's presence, she shot herself.
I don't think that was very important.
But look at the men who used you. Were any of them your former girl children?
Amiga paused.
Maybe, good for them, if they got even.
Laughing, I objected, no, that's only hating and getting even, and hating and getting even, back and forth and getting nowhere.
You have to start by understanding, as you do now since you saw yourself as the cruel father. Understanding leads to tolerance, and then to patience, and finally maybe even to forgiveness. This all leads to fairness and a balance is achieved.
Are you ready to go now?
You may see someone else coming.
Yes, Grandmama, 146,
I thought she might come.
Now all three of you can go into the light.
Goodbye. Gracias.
Came Amiga's happy farewell.
And the channel added, I/less than/are her presence go.
Then Master Ching's voice came again. Today's work was very good.
A very sad little Amiga is helped, is saved. Thank you.
Thank this entity, Kathleen, for letting Amiga into her.
All is past. Rescuing groups of disembodied souls after the great mudslide that buried several villages in Colombia, South America, some years ago.
Nurse V.
of our little ESP group told us that she had gone into private meditation and, leaving her body asleep at home, had traveled astrally to Colombia. She is the only one of our group who can do this and control the process. She attempted to help the persons who had been killed, reasoning that the people still living would be assisted as soon as rescue teams could reach them. Her intent was to meet the ones who had died, whose psyches had been so abruptly torn from their bodies. They would be in a state of shock or stupor. She felt that she did help many of these victims, although others didn't seem to be ready, and some were still sleeping under the mud. The next day, back in her physical body, she felt drained of energy, nearly exhausted. I wondered,
Maybe there were points of technique that we needed to learn in order to avoid such exhaustion. In a later meeting, we asked our advisors about this subject. Remember, said one advisor, that on our side these events or catastrophes, as you call them, are known all about beforehand, and preparations are made to receive the souls that are destined to come over. Nevertheless, we miss 147, some, or some are not ready. Any help that you on that side can give is always welcome. Instead of trying to do too much, we were instructed, don't try to be nurses or doctors, helping one at a time. Just visualize a safe path or a road or highway and call the souls to get on the highway. They will be met by helpers and taken care of from there. I like the images of those words, a highway, smooth and unobstructed, a homey little road, or even a clear footpath. No matter what the type of entity, one of those three pathways would surely be attractive, all of them leading toward the light. Another meditation group visualizes a bridge of light and calls the souls to come and cross over it into the light. We remember these instructions when we meditate for the victims of earthquakes, floods, fires, and hurricanes, or famines or war zones. When we in physical bodies do this work, however, we need to remember that our earth plane frequency of vibration is different from that of the souls passing over, and we need to ask for extra energy for ourselves. It was indicated that we might need extra rest or sleep afterward, as well. About this time there was a tragic event in Saudi Arabia. The news media reported that many Muslims were trapped by an explosion in a tunnel while returning from their pilgrimage to Mecca. The temperature was 109°F. The lights went out, people became panic-stricken, and crushed and trampled one another. An estimated 1,400 died, most of suffocation. Charlene and I decided to see if the victims needed help. She channeled, I facilitated, calling the souls who are trapped in the hot tunnel, calling the one who is strongest spiritually to be your spokesman and speak to us for you. 148. A man answered, saying his name was Phil, spelling it out hesitantly when I asked how it would be spelled in the English alphabet. He said that many souls were together there. I ask you to listen to what I have to tell you and to have courage. There is something the souls need to know, we can't see nor hear you. Do you see us?
As if through a veil, misty, said Phil.
Yes, as if through a veil, and the veil is death. Do you understand? You are on one side of that veil and we are on the other side of death. Philo's lips moved silently a moment. Then, yes. How much do you remember before things became misty to you? Philo moved restlessly. Noise, screaming, shouting, darkness, heaviness, everything changed.
Yes.
And now, all of you souls, listen, the noise, screaming, shouting, and heat and darkness are in the past. Your bodies are gone, but you are alive. So stand up strong and straight, think your mind calm, your feelings calm, and think courage as you think of death. God, Allah, loves you. He is the merciful, the compassionate. Let there be memories only, of the past. Phil, are they listening? They understand. Fine. We are not of your religion, but we want to help you. Put out of yourselves heaviness and distress, any anger or hate, any pain and helplessness. Make yourselves shining and clean. You made your pilgrimage to Mecca and now you are going to the spiritual Mecca. Phil, please explain it to them in your own terms, if I have not expressed it clearly. Most of the earthbound souls were ready to go. All of you are faithful ones who were on your pilgrimage. You are God's children. But God has many children. God is merciful, his children are of all religions. Do you know this?
I ask for spiritual helpers to assist Philo to lead them, if he needs help.
What do you see, Charlene?
Not even entity types, just sparkles shining.
Souls, I finished, know that all religions are worthy of respect. Remember when you come back that we are all children of God. Goodbye. Happy journey.
Allah be praised for your help, said Phil.
We accept your help so graciously given. We go now.
Not all of the souls had been ready to follow Phil. A woman's voice said that she was still looking to FMD her husband and oldest son, but she and others accepted that their family members, whether living or dead, were safe in God's love, wherever they were, and she decided, no one needs to look back, do they? And so she led a second group into the light. That left only a few who did not want to leave the earth plane. The man speaking for these said he had been bumped to perform a certain work, and that work was not yet accomplished. I agreed that the change had been so sudden, so abrupt that it tore him out of the earth scene. But remember that we still here cannot see or hear you now. If you try to stay, you would be frustrated, ignored by everyone. The physical plane is for physical work, and you need to leave your work for others now and move on to the plane of souls, the heavenly land, and go to your own work there. You can still send love and thoughts to those who still live on the earth plane. Do you understand? We are trying to help you. It wasn't supposed to be like this, insisted the man. Do you mean that your death was a true accident? Yes, he said positively. One of your Muslim leaders said the explosion was the will of Allah and that it was the destiny of each of the 1400 to die at that precise moment, if not in the tunnel, then elsewhere. 150, for some, perhaps, was his only reply. If it was not their destiny, then even so, as one holy teaching says, all things work together for good, to those who love the Lord. All of you were on pilgrimage, all of you are those who love God. What else can you tell me, how this experience can be turned to good? He did not answer. I asked for a wise teacher of his own religion to explain the spiritual situation to this and the remaining souls, but there was no response. It was very quiet. After a moment of waiting, I asked Master Cheng if he would give a message to these who felt that their lives had been cut short before their time. With calm deliberation came Master Cheng's message, nothing is lost, nothing is delayed, no harm is done. Time is not of much importance. You will go on and learn and come back, and do the job better for the experience. I thanked him and said, souls, you heard this wise master. If you doubt, offer your doubt as a sacrifice to Allah, a gift to him. If you feel reluctance or regret to leave the earth plane, offer those as gifts to him. Let his light into your heart, let Master Cheng's words be like a healing flow within you. Now are you ready to follow Master Cheng or one of your own spiritual leaders? This time all were ready, no little lost ones remaining, and Charlene said that all she saw was just shining space. I saw just light and darkness, basically, she added, after returning to full consciousness. A lot of souls had already gone on. Those remaining were still huddled together, filled with darkness and heaviness. It all happened so suddenly. They were good people. They were really grateful to be helped. When you said the word death, they suddenly understood and felt relief. But when you said, when you come back, they looked startled. 151, what each of us can do all through this chapter 1 have talked about channeling and contacting lost or wandering entities through hypnosis. That has been the way in which I have done this work, and it gives the satisfaction of hearing directly through the channel what the feelings and thoughts of the entities contacted are. It is a conversation between the contacted soul and me. The disadvantage is that a third person, the channel, needs to be present. Many are excellent, capable, and willing, but most are also extremely busy. Some psychic persons, including some of my friends, are able to hold such conversations with invisible entities either in meditation or through automatic writing, or by asking their discarnate guides and teachers questions and listening with open minds for answers. For most people, however, the psychic ability may not be sufficiently developed and the availability of a friend who can cooperate as a channel may be lacking. Many people do offer prayers for others who are in dire circumstances or in suspected distress or unhappiness. Depending on what their religion has taught them, these persons may pray for the dead as well as for the living. The prayers may be directed to God directly, to one of the saints, to angelic beings, or simply to servants of the light. For several years all of the friends who had assisted me as channels became so deeply involved in their own activities and problems that I found myself thrown back onto my own resources. I accepted the summation as a spiritual lesson that I needed to stand on my own feet and take full responsibility alone for the work I felt was mine to do. 152. During this period I began a series of morning meditations aimed at assisting certain groups of souls that needed help. One morning I might focus on the souls of aged people who felt that their usefulness had gone and that their continued living was a burden on their families, and who in their despondency wanted to die. I focused especially on those who did manage to commit suicide. In my meditation I called to their notice the safe highway or roadway that led into the light, urged them to come and let themselves be comforted and helped home. Another morning I would focus on the infants who had been rejected, their bodies aborted before birth or left exposed to die after being born. Using words like a warm stream of love instead of light, I called these souls to come and let themselves be born into the safe, warm pool of love. When a friend did channel for these at a later time, she said that thousands of tiny bundles came floating at the call, most of them containing girl babies. At yet another time I would call all the lonely, miserable teenagers who felt that their families did not care about them and who in desperation had killed themselves. I felt their loneliness and desperation. Many of them believed that nobody would care, nobody would even notice if they disappeared, they felt worthless. And then there were those who had turned to drugs to deaden the feelings of desperation and loneliness and had killed their body accidentally by an overdose of something. There was also the category of adults of both sexes who were overburdened by the demands of family and job. It seemed that there was never a dearth of groups of needy persons to try to help. Toddlers killed by abuse, gang members in a rumble, victims of wars, floods, earthquakes, fires, famine, accidents. After a few weeks of more or less regular meditations of this sort, I began to feel a deep weariness. Therefore, I suggest that those who use a similar type of approach ask for additional strength and energy for themselves as well as for the ones they are wishing to assist. As mentioned, my motto was, "It can't hurt and it may help." One disadvantage for me was that I had to offer my desire to the higher powers and not have any way of knowing how much, if any, effect my meditations and prayers had produced. This was only a self-centered wish, I knew, and I recalled the maxim of the Bhagavad Gita, to serve for the sake of the service and not in the hope of reward, and the Buddhist maxim, to perform action without attachment to the fruits of the action. It is not necessary to know how much or even whether one has helped. To quote Gandhi, "Whatever you do will never be enough, but it matters enormously that you do it." If you wish to become a helper in this work, as many do, I suggest that you begin by meditating at first for one or a few individuals whom you know personally or whose stories you have read about or heard about on television. Quiet your own mind and emotions first of all, this is important. Then call the person you wish to assist, and explain what happened and what the result was, that is, that the person's body died. Be gentle but forthright. Listen for any answering thoughts that may come into your mind, they may be from the one you are talking to. Answer any questions that come into your mind as if from the other, the soul may not realize that the body has died. Gradually, as you continue, you will acquire self-confidence and will feel at ease in calling to larger groups of souls and asking them to come onto the bright safe highway or the bridge of light leading into the next dimension, their home. One psychic friend, a boy who was about 12 at the time, said that many who wanted to answer the invitation, felt that they could not come because they were so dirty, loaded with the trash of unpleasant mental and emotional habits and of rejection and abuse. His mother, also psychic, agreed. She said that many souls needed to be given an opportunity, by suggested visualizations, to clean themselves up before coming into the highway and heading home. She likes the symbol of a pool of cleansing, healing light. Her son felt that some of the souls needed stiff brushes as well. Both agreed that many entities felt a deep sense of unworthiness and a fear of being rejected if they tried to come. We have included in our wording that the invitation is for all who hear us and are ready to go to the next realm, even those who feel most unworthy, the outcasts, the untouchables, the infants. We have found that the greatest hindrance to this type of work is not in ourselves but in the deep-rooted rage and hate, based on either fear or a sense of superiority, that infects the places where wars are seething. Some wars are clearly visible, with all the fear, pain, violence, and blood that we hear and read so much about.